Buenos días a todos. Bienvenidos a este segundo episodio del Nelson Albino Podcast. El episodio de hoy es uno sumamente importante gracias a la invitada que tengo hoy. Ella es la principal comentarista a nivel internacional sobre la deuda de Puerto Rico. Es la persona que pronosticó en el año 2012 que el gobierno de Puerto Rico sería insolvente. Fue contribuyente en la Agencia Internacional de Noticias Reuters y ha tenido múltiples apariciones en las cadenas internacionales como la BBC, RT, NPR y varias páginas de nivel nacional. Ha asesorado en el Congreso en asuntos relacionados a economía y tiene vasta experiencia, suma experiencia, con las agencias crediticias, esas que le dan el rating a los bonos. La creadora del hashtag Muniland sobre el mercado de bonos municipales y la fundadora de la firma Puerto Rico Clearinghouse, la cual provee análisis experto a firmas de inversiones, firmas de abogados y al Congreso sobre la deuda de Puerto Rico. Ella es la señora Kate Long. Hi Kate, how are you?
Good, Nelson. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for accepting this invitation, and I'm really honored for you being here in my second ever episode of this new project that I started last week.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Well, Kate, we're gonna talk about a little bit about the Puerto Rico debt crisis. I know you know a lot about this issue.
Right.
So, Kate, you were the first person in predicting that the government of Puerto Rico will go bankrupt, basically. That you wrote that we were, Puerto Ricos were America's great Greece. So, give us a little bit about, tell us a little bit about how Puerto Rico, on your own opinion, how Puerto Rico got in this huge mess that is today.
Sure. So, in the 1950s, Congress gave Puerto Rico the right to self-govern and collect taxes and decide which services they would provide to their people. And it worked very well for quite a long time. Puerto Rico grew. There was out-migration during some of that time, but for the most part, the economy was pretty successful. Companies came and established businesses. US pharmaceutical companies came. And mainly for they had a lot of tax advantages, federal tax advantages. And then in 1996, this is well known, Puerto Rican administration agreed to with Congress to sunset this tax provision called 936. And as a consequence, a number of companies that manufactured on the island decided to leave by 2006. So you have a kind of a spiral, economic spiral that happened after that, where there was a lot of out-migration because there was not jobs for people.
Correct.
And in that time, the government, rather than reducing its spending, just started issuing debt, essentially borrowing in the financial markets to continue providing government services. And that just grew and grew. And then in 2012, when I first, looked at Puerto Rico, it just seemed obvious that they had been on this path of borrowing too much, and spending more than they collected every year. So
So
it's
basically,
a long, go ahead. I'm so
yes,
sorry.
go ahead, please. Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Well, I think the problems that are trying to be untangled now by the courts, under this framework of federal law, PROMESA, just were decades in the making. It's a long, long history of poor management on the part of the government and borrowing and not addressing the needs of the people probably in a way that most state governments would. So
Yeah, so basically this is a problem that could be prevented in the past, that it shouldn't happen if government have been doing or done the correct thing, right?
Right, so Puerto Rico, like most states, almost every state has a balanced budget amendment in the Constitution. And that requires the government to balance their spending every year with the tax revenues they collect. And Puerto Rico historically has, just blown right through that requirement. States, the 50 states, year by year, their revenue changes because, the economy goes up and down, and they make adjustments. They make cuts or they increase spending. And Puerto Rico never had a practice of doing that in a regular, sustained way. And then, we get situations like Law 7, where there was just this massive cut under Governor Fortuño. But on a regular yearly basis, the government was not adjusting their spending to meet their revenues.
Yeah, but you mentioned something very, very interesting name. You mentioned Governor Luis Fortuño, who we suppose he's a Republican governor, so he was a Republican governor, so we were supposed to see that a fiscal conservative type of government during his administration, but the numbers say that Governor Fortuño was his administration is the administration that borrowed the most amount of money. So I do you think that
Can't
the
really.
2000s do you think that the 2000s decade was the worst part of our economic history, even though the recession started in 2006? But what about the period from 2000 to 2010? Do you think that that also hurt a lot, and in our economic crisis?
Yeah, when you look. And I've tweeted this out, and we can add it somehow if you want. There's you can see the debt issued per governor, and it certainly started even prior to the current governor's father, Pedro Rosselló, even earlier than that, but it was on a much smaller scale. And then each successive governor would just, borrow as much or more. Sometimes that borrowing was to pay off old debt. And some of it was what we call new money debt, which is new cash coming into the government. But you can see governor after governor, regardless of the party, just increasing the debt pretty dramatically.
Some people say that that big government policies, that big government policies involve high spending. So some people say that big government po historically big government policies in Puerto Rico since the 1940s, when the Puerto Rican people elected his first governor, is the main cause that Puerto Rico it hasn't been economically successful. Do you agree with those statements that big government policies are the reason, regardless of political parties or political status? Do you believe that is big government policies the reason that Puerto Rico it hasn't been successful lately?
Yeah, I think the best evidence of the success of that is when you look at World Bank data, and World Bank is an international organization that judges countries or political units on how easy it is to do business in those countries. And that means a new company, say, coming in, and they measure things like being able to register property or get electricity or resolve debts with other parties. Puerto Rico ranks like 65th or 67th around the world. It's terrible. And in contrast, the mainland US rates around seventh. So that just shows you that it is very difficult. I know anecdotally, many business people have told me they've come to Puerto Rico, tried to establish some business, and found the bureaucracy was overwhelming. And they can come back to the mainland and invest, or they can go many other places around the world. So the harder it is in Puerto Rico, less likely people will want to build businesses and create jobs there. So that is really, and the oversight board, the fiscal oversight board, has made that a core element of the fiscal plans they've developed, which is the government, Puerto Rican government, monitoring this World Bank ranking and trying to push Puerto Rico up and improve that ranking. And that's really important.
Yes. And now that you mentioned the oversight board, what do you think are being the role of the oversight board since the PROMESA Act was passed by Congress and signed by President Obama? What's your opinion of the job that the oversight board has been doing in Puerto Rico since it was established?
Yeah, I think I would give them a C minus,
Okay.
basically. I think, there's a lot of things that happened. One, they waited way too long to hire an executive director. They pay her too much. I don't think she's really the right person to be doing that job. She never hired much internal staff for the oversight board, so they rely on outside firms like McKinsey, who I don't think have a cultural understanding of Puerto Rico. Very much, and that's caused this huge fight between the oversight board and the government. That's a huge problem. There has to be more collaboration between the government and the oversight board. I think that historically, people will judge them, the oversight board is, making an enormous mistake in not negotiating with creditors. That's part of the law, but they essentially just decided to, pay lip service to that and just go straight to these court proceedings. And that was not the intention of Congress. So that was a huge mistake.
Yeah, I understand. Some have there have been rumors since President Donald Trump took office last year that there might be a change of members in the oversight board in the future. Do you think that's going to happen?
So the terms of the members of the oversight board are 3 years, and that term comes to an end. They were all appointed in August of 2016, so their terms come to an end this coming August of 2019. And I know that, well, say for Ana Maria Santos, she's now been appointed in the, essentially the budget director for the governor of California. I don't see how she would even have time. I don't think she's done a good job, but I don't see how she would have time. I think several of the board members are very conflicted because they issued a lot of this debt. They should not be, they should not continue on the board. And I think that Judge Gonzalez, who's on the board, has been very litigious and has led a lot of this excessive litigation that's happened. I don't think he should continue. He was President Obama's direct appointment. So I think, I believe, and I think many Puerto Ricans believe it would be good to have some, a turnover of the board membership that brought new people in that really do not have any direct business conflicts with the debt crisis or the fiscal crisis.
I totally agree
So
with
that's
you.
would be
Yeah, I totally agree with you because when the members of the board were appointed, I disagreed with many of the appointments. The first thing that I thought when the PROMESA Act was passed that all members of the board will be from outside the island, so they will not have any connection with the government, past administration, with debt issue, Puerto Rican bonds, etc. I heard that some congressmen, when they found out that some of the members of the board were involved in an issue on the debt issue in past administrations, they were alarmed and shocked. So, based on your experience and expertise of so many years dealing with the Puerto Rico debt crisis, what you can what kind of be your opinion on the current administration's handling of this situation of Governor Rossio?
Of the current Puerto Rican government?
Yes.
Yes. I listen, I think that the complications of PROMESA and of Hurricane Maria would have been trying for even a very, very seasoned governor. And I think that Governor Rossio didn't have any governing experience prior to taking his position. And I think, you know, he's just basically on many fronts been overwhelmed. I think that, you know, I think that basically he would benefit the Puerto Rican people to have a more collaborative approach to the oversight board and to, you know, the White House and Congress. And he's sort of spent a lot of time favoring Democrats nationally. I don't think that was necessarily the best approach, because, you know, both parties govern federally, nationally. So, you know, I think some of the decisions he has made over the last 2 years, I would not have made. But the key thing here is, can he help Puerto Rico grow? And on that front, I think he has focused a fair amount of time and effort. And I think all that work will have very positive benefits for the island.
Yeah, no, and in these past midterm elections, Governor Rosselló basically campaigned for liberal candidates in the states, and he campaigned against the Republican Party. He campaigned against Republican candidates for Congress. He attacked President Trump, and the results of the elections were the other thing. Well, we have a Republican Senate in for the next 2 years. We have a House of Representatives with a Democratic majority, but it's basically a small majority. So I think that it was a huge mistake from Governor Rosselló to go to Florida and go to other different states and campaign against the GOP. So what's your predictions of the Puerto Rican future, economic future, or what do you think are going to be the governor's how the governor's can will handle this situation now that for the next 2 years, for the remainder of his term, he's going to face a more conservative Senate, a President Trump that, in my opinion, is now stronger with this the result of midterm elections. What do you think are how the midterm elections results are going to affect Puerto Rico for the remainder of Governor Rosselló's term?
So I think that Governor Rossello, a lot of his effort was, and he stated repeatedly that people had to, you know, support Puerto Rico or shut up or something like that. I forget as he says. Very, very odd. Very aggressive, extremely aggressive towards other politicians. So I think that, you know, kind of my read of Congress now is that even though the Democrats have taken the House, that the leadership of the House favors Puerto Rican leadership in the House that doesn't necessarily support statehood. And I think the latest thing I heard was that Representative Grijalva of Arizona, who will lead the Natural Resources Committee this term, is willing to have a status referendum, but wants the Commonwealth option included, which was excluded in the referendum that Governor Rosselló did forced last year. So I think that the status issue remains really in flux. And Governor Rosselló had put a lot of his own prestige and energy into pushing politicians and that supported statehood. So, you know, I think that that wasn't necessarily, I mean, given where the island is with hurricane recovery, I wouldn't have spent my time that way as a leader. But that was a choice Governor Rossello made. And now we'll see. I mean, we'll just see what what comes out. In terms of economic recovery, as hellacious as Hurricane Maria was for the people, I can't even imagine. In terms of economics, it's been, a big boon because essentially all the infrastructure or much of the infrastructure in Puerto Rico is going to be rebuilt at, federal expense. And that's like unbelievable when you think about it. Like no other island in the Caribbean is getting another government to come in and just rebuild everything for them.
That's
So,
really true.
yeah, I mean, it's sad. I mean, I can't even imagine the loss of life. It's just been horrible. But in the long term, I think that in a way, Maria just swept the slate clean for Puerto Rico, and hopefully the recovery will work out in a way that everyone benefits. Not only the people that work on the island, but the infrastructure will be good and strong and well designed and well built. So in the long run, hopefully this will be really beneficial for the island.
Yeah, that's why I'm sure you know Mr. Alfredo Casio from the Alianza Estadista, the Statehood Alliance movement. I remember that I told him. I remember that I told him in a conversation that we had that Governor Ricardo Rosselló had the opportunity to be a true statement after Hurricane Maria, and he didn't took that chance. He put politics above the Puerto Rican people. That's my personal opinion. But basically,
When you think about that, Nelson, you think about his father having pushed this so many years ago, right? And often I
yeah.
feel like it's more of a family issue for the Rosselló family than it's necessarily an issue for the island. And statehood is really, really, really important. There's no question. But right now, the recovery of the island and cleaning up this, debt mess is key, and that it's really hard for most people on the mainland to think about Puerto Rico in its current bankruptcy just to become a state. And it most people I think would feel like do the hard work of cleaning up, get the government running on an efficient basis, and then apply to be a state. If you want to be equal to the states, act like a state. So
Yeah.
it's just, but those are pretty, everyone has their own political point of view. I don't run the island, so, and neither do you. So the people elected Governor Rosselló, and those are the choices he made. So.
Yeah. So, Kate, if you had the chance of being of being the in a governor's cabinet or any of being in position of making decisions, what do you think will be the best decisions or the best the best decisions that a governor can make to recover to recover from this crisis, to make the island economically strong again? What will you do if you've been in a position of power?
Yeah, you know what? I would address the World Bank ranking, doing business rankings, and I would make that a checklist, and I would go down one by one, and I would focus everyone's attention on improving those processes. And it would be things like registering property. I mean, there's like half the property in Puerto Rico does not have a title, or a deed, which is impossible to imagine. One is that most families pass on their wealth through their homes. So the fact that these properties are not titled, nobody gets legal transfer of wealth when, a family member dies. And there's just basic things in the Puerto Rican economy like that that I don't understand. And if I were in the cabinet, I would push to, focus on getting these things done. PREPA obviously needs or AE needs a lot of time, a lot of time spent on it, and the transition to some kind of, electric generating future that's sustainable and can support a strong economy is probably number one. We didn't really mention that, but anyone that you look at that has done serious analysis of Puerto Rico would point to the electric utility. And, how does a household or a business operate when the power just can go out for no reason on a regular basis? I mean, you can't have a successful economy when the power system is a wreck. So, very basic fundamental issues that I think a lot of people leave the island and they come to the mainland and they're just happy that things work efficiently, instead
Yeah,
of
yeah.
everything being a headache, right? I mean, on the mainland,
Exactly.
you don't take the whole day off to go register your car, right? You register online.
Yeah.
Or maybe
Yeah, that's
if you do
true.
go, it takes you an hour, okay? So when we hear stories about people, having to stand in line all day to register their car, we just think that stuff's insane. Like, why is the government operating so inefficiently down there? So those are the kind of things that I would focus on, just making the government experience frictionless for people, make it efficient for, citizens and for businesses, and then get it out of the way. Because right now the government seems to be in the way of people getting their life going. So, I would work on really basic stuff like that.
Yeah, Puerto Rico is basically a the so-called liberal paradise because government is manage everything here. So, Kate, do you think that Puerto Rico needs an urgent tax cut legislation?
Well, as I've said many, 100 times on Twitter, there no bankrupt entity in the history of the Western world that I'm aware of has ever cut taxes and said they can't pay bondholders. And of course,
Okay.
every taxpayer everywhere wants lower taxes, but it's extremely unusual. Typically, in a bankruptcy situation, taxes are raised, not lowered. So, the idea that everyone, the people are getting tax cuts and bondholders are getting, not getting repaid just doesn't make sense. So there's a lot of elements to that, but I think, I think overall in the Puerto Rican government, there's just a lot of places to improve. We have the government in PR has absenteeism rates of like 35% of the employees. That's unheard of. So, I would be much more in favor of getting rid of people that don't come to work, pay bondholders, tax cuts. I mean, that would be my approach. And I know that's not
Okay.
popular, and I know it's not, the likelihood of Governor Rossio doing that is like zero. But that's how I would approach it. If people don't come to work, they don't get paid. So that's not that unusual in the private sector.
Yeah, I understand your point and it makes sense. What do you think about slashing regulations so Puerto Ricans can have more access to that opportunity of starting a business?
Absolutely. 100%. 10,000%. People have to be able to, even if it's just a taco stand on the corner, I mean, people need to have simple ways to start businesses and make income for themselves. That's true on the mainland too. That's true everywhere.
And that creates
Puerto Rico
revenue
is a
for the
really important,
company.
right? I mean, let's be realistic.
Well, we are back. We had a technical issue. So we were in the last part of this interview. Kate, so you were saying that cutting slash so Puerto Ricans can start their own business will be the one of the best things that could happen to the island, so to in this effort to recover from this economic crisis, right?
Correct. So, I mean, I think the path to prosperity and the path to people being able to remain on the island and stay with their families is to create more jobs. There's no other solution that is as effective and important. People have to have means of making a living and supporting themselves. And I think, in terms of slashing regulations, there's no better example on the island than Uber. And excuse me.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
You know, the
Uber.
drivers fought with the taxis at the airport to be able to get access to pick up people flying in. And there's been numerous problems, you know, where the taxi drivers have fought, you know, against the adoption or the expansion or the, you know, the ability of people to become Uber drivers. And that's a huge problem because if you want to increase tourism, you have to have a good system for people to get around the island. And people that I know that travel to Puerto Rico are not thrilled with the taxi system. So, you know, it's just that's a perfect example of, you know, where regulations have to be refined, special interests have to be weakened. And in that case, it's the taxi drivers. So that's a role government can play, but it's a philosophy that government has to embrace as important. And we're not quite there yet in Puerto Rico. I think there's glimmers of opportunity and hope for it, but we're just not there yet.
Yeah, definitely not. There are still many cronies here that benefit from government privileges, you know. So Kate, just once again, I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity of interview you for this half an hour. Any last words you want to say? Any advice that you want to give to any government official that might listen to this podcast when he's ready.
Nelson, thank you for inviting me and congratulations on launching your podcast. I would just like to say I find the Puerto Rican people to be very hardworking, very honest for the most part, very upright, very moral. And if government could get out of their way, just as we've discussed a little, the opportunities for Puerto Rico in the future are enormous. It's a wonderful place. It's beautiful. The people are great. It's just that there's been so much corruption on the island and so much, you know, so much suppression of jobs development and business development. The people have had to leave. And this enormous, you know, out migration that we see, it's just a real, really sad thing. And government is in good part responsible for that. It's not Congress that caused it. It's not, you know, European Union. It's not Singapore. It's what the Puerto Rican government has done. And the more they can reflect on their role in, you know, killing job opportunities and business development, the better off I think the island will be.
I certainly agree. Well, Kate, again, thank you so much. I wish you a very nice, very good Thanksgiving day with your loved ones. And I hope that we can start chatting again. We'll be chatting again in the near future. And thank you for everything that you've been doing for us. You know, you've been hardworking on the advising and doing your research on this. And we all follow your
Great.
hashtag
Thank you so much for having me,
Muniland.
Nelson, and happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Bueno, escucharon a Kate Long. Ella es una de las, o la principal comentarista a nivel internacional de la del asunto de la deuda de Puerto Rico y la crisis. Así que muchas gracias por escuchar este episodio del podcast y los espero para la próxima edición. Que tengan un feliz día de Acción de Gracias. Buenas tardes.